Only cowards dress in iron.
This coward is about to kill you, Sayer. The man was no knight, but his courage had earned him that much courtesy.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Courtesy, yes. This week, I don't have anything amusing to say after that quote.
No, not really. Eric's about to fuck somebody up, though.
Except that, perhaps I feel like extending a courtesy to our guest host this week.
Well, I'm not a guest host. I'm here.
No, I definitely meant Daryl.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's me. Or is it? The man, the myth, the legend, the silver fox, Jonathan Benton.
Silver fox. Yeah, it's just me.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear the ladies cranking their radios up from here.
Yeah, I just imagine they're just throwing their panties at the computer now.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over that.
Welcome to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. I'm Daryl.
I'm Will. Sometimes
Ken. I'm Brett. Will, you're never known as Kenan.
Never. It's completely brand new. Welcome to my new identity. Also known as Penfold.
Best Gen Con shirt ever.
Did you actually wear that shirt, Daryl?
It was really good.
Yeah, I most certainly did wear it.
I love that.
Yeah. Everybody got it.
We started to make t-shirts one year and bring them. This was the pre-Worlds last year that said Got Collusion, but...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that would have been great.
Kind of took fun out of it after last world, so.
Bummer.
I'd wear a Got Collusion shirt.
I absolutely would.
Hey, there's still time for you to make one before Worlds.
But would that actually be collusion? Like, would I get be sued for wearing that shirt if one other person was wearing it?
I was going to say, only if more than one person does.
So yes, Quentin, I hear you did better than my two cohorts at Worlds or at Gen Con.
So well, barely.
At Worlds.
Yeah, barely.
I mean, you did significantly better than Daryl did.
Yeah, if you guys want, I'll go into a little bit of that. What I can remember, anyway.
Yeah, let us know if there's anything worthwhile.
Sure, it shouldn't take too long because. Like I say, it's a little fuzzy at this point.
Understandable.
You know, I started out against a Stark deck, and I want to say the guy's name was Brian, one of the nicest guys that I'd got a chance to play. He's kind of a newer player. He's been playing since, I think, right before Gen Con last year, and he informed me that he didn't do so well at Gen Con last year. But I thought it was a good sign. It was a good sign that he was back this year. And, I was playing Targ, Knights of Hollow Hill, and Brian, if that's his name, was playing a Stark deck. I didn't have too much trouble out of that round. That one went pretty easily, and then I got paired against a guy named Tony Stark.
For reals?
That's the best.
That's amazing. I am actually looking at pictures of Iron Man right now. That's fantastic.
Actually, no, wait a second. It might not have been Tony, but his last name was definitely... No, it wasn't Tony, sorry.
neither his first or his last name were actually Tony Stark.
They were actually Tim.
It was Mike. It was Mike Stark. Sorry, Mike. Just called him superhero. Which, his deck performed like a superhero in this game, so maybe that's why I was thinking his name was Tony. Yeah, he was playing... And this is what kind of got me. He wasn't playing the Stark deck. He was playing a Greyjoy deck, and which I felt and told him was rather traitorous of him. But yeah, he totally had the upper hand most of the game. I didn't get any of my draw. I was top decking the entire game, and of course in the Knight of the Hollow Hill deck, never a good thing.
Out of curiosity, what kind of draw is one running out of Targ Knights the Hollow Hill these days?
Well, I thought I was being all clever, and I had thrown in a couple of copies of Golden Tooth Mines in addition to Meraxes.
Really?
Yeah.
That does sound clever.
I had a couple of desperate measures, and I was hoping to hit those, and if I didn't have the gold, I was going to play the prayer that got locations back out of the discard pile.
Yeah, totally.
But that never really came about, and I always had 4 gold left over, so it was never an issue playing a Golden Tooth Mines, because that deck doesn't play any characters anyway. You know, it didn't want to get out all the influence and ambush at the end, so.
Okay.
And I had all the other stuff in there too, like Joko and the normal Targ stuff. But I did a Hatchling's Feast, and losing Street Wave, I was just trying to find something that made up for that. And small caveat, I think I played 2 practice games in between winning the Louisville Regional, which was back in, I want to say, May, and Gen Con. And I just have been unmotivated to play a whole lot, and mostly I had the Tennessee Regional coming up in between then, so I got in a few games on that day, but I didn't play any practice games for it because I'd already won a regional, and Gen Con isn't Worlds anymore, so
didn't want to dominate too badly.
Yeah, I couldn't make myself put in the work this year, so yeah, all of the stuff, yeah, I played 2 games and I didn't practice with the deck that I ended up taking, because I ended up changing that Targ Knights of Hollow Hill quite a bit. But I had run it at 1 regional before, and I felt fairly comfortable with it. I just would have preferred Golden Tooth Mines more often that day. That would have helped me out a lot. But so 3 copies probably would have been the better. And like I say, I thought I was being all clever with that, and then Steve tells me that the DC Metas version of that was running 3 Golden Tooth Mines. So.
Oh, really? Huh. Did not hear about that.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them were actually playing it that day, but he said that was one of the options on the table, apparently. Of course, we all know most of them went with the Quentin deck, but more on that in a minute. So I got beat by Mr. Not Tony Stark, Mike Stark, and I cannot remember at all who I played in round 3, but I knew I won.
Story of my life.
So I was 2-1 at that point, and then I got paired up against Luigi, and I sit down to play Luigi.
I played against his deck too.
You probably played more of it than I did, because we get about halfway through the first plot, and then we start hearing rumors, whispers, that everybody needs to stop playing because they've made a mistake with the pairings and they need to reseed the whole round.
Oh, right.
I was a little disappointed in this because he's playing a Maester's deck. Oh, that third round, I think I was playing a Maester's deck, maybe. Because I remember beating a Maester's deck that day. It was either the Stark deck was a Maester deck, but I don't think it was. It might have been a Greyjoy Maester round 3, but you know, I had a ton of burn in my hand, and I was able to burn Mr. Amon as soon as he came out, and I was feeling pretty good about that game when they when they told us they needed to smooth everybody up. And I'm not sure that everybody even got repaired, but I got repaired to play Kyle Vansel, who was playing a Martell Clinton deck.
Right.
And he promptly drops a 2-claim flight and Arion on the table. And I'm sitting there looking at my hand going, I know the priority for Knights of Hollow Hill is to block all entry challenges. You know, if Bruno taught me anything, he taught me that about that deck. And so I'm looking at it, and I've got a character on the table because I'd ambushed one in pre-challenged and ruled by decreed. And I'm thinking, going through all the permutations, I'm not seeing a way that I can block the intrigue challenge and block the military challenge. Mm-hmm. And I was totally spacing on the fact that actually I couldn't block either one of them. I was trying to decide which one I could get by with. But he had Bastard of God's Grace out, and that totally threw off all the challenge math, which meant I couldn't block either one of them. So I ended up beating the 2-claim military challenge and basically almost wiping my board down to one weenie and losing 3 out of the 4 cards. Yeah, and that was pretty much game. Probably no way I was going to come back from that. The only way I come back from that is to top deck a Hatchling's Feast, and I didn't do it. And I also needed to probably top deck a bunch of draw fast. And maybe between those two, Valor and Threat from the North with the Hatchling's Feast, maybe you could have crawled back into it, but very unlikely. So, yeah, Kyle ran all over me in that game. And the fifth game, I ended up playing a mirror match against a Tard Knights of Hill deck, and he ran a lot of dragons in his. I just basically kept hitting him with 2-claim plots and wore him down. He never could keep any of his dragons on the table because I kept ambushing in things like Company of the Cat, and he was having to kill dragons off. And then the last game, I played against a guy who from North Carolina who made it to the Tennessee Regional playing a Stark Shadows deck, and he ended up top fouring in our regional. It's a pretty solid Stark Shadows deck, but I got 2 Golden Tooth Mines out in that game. That was the only time I really had my draw going that well all day, and the card advantage was just too much. I typically had probably 11 or 12 plus cards the whole game. So that gave me all the burn and ambush that I needed. He was really relying on things like Black Cells, and Black Cells and Alchemist Guild Hall don't do you a whole lot good when your characters are jumping in the challenges.
Yeah, exactly.
And at that point, I'm 4-2, thinking I should have a pretty decent strength of schedule because I've kind of kept tabs on everybody. And the guy that I told you about at first, a really nice Stark player, he's talking to me in between rounds, and he's telling me that I think he ends up going 3-3, decides that he's going to play all day, he's not going to do anything else, and I knew that was going to help my strength of schedule quite a bit.
Cool.
So I was really happy about that, obviously. So my goal was just to make top 16 and hope that I got lucky from there, because you never know what might happen. And mm-hmm. You see the list when they bring the list out. I'm standing beside Nate, and they've put one list on the board, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, you know, I'm really far down that list. Like, I didn't know enough to, I couldn't see enough to count them exactly, but I knew that it looked like there were a ton of people in front of me, and I'm thinking, I'm sitting there going, how many 4-2s were there? And I'm thinking, and there were that many of them that had a better strength of schedule than that. That's just so weird, because I knew a lot of people would have dropped, and none of my guys dropped. And so I'm sitting there trying to figure that out, and everybody kind of clears away. They kind of make the announcements and tell everybody to be back at a certain time to start top 16. Mm-hmm. And I go to the board, and I look at it, and I see that when I get a better look there, not just over Nate's shoulder, but I see that I have a really high strength of schedule, which is higher than most of the 4-2s in the field, and yet for some reason I'm ranked like 33rd.
Oh.
And I know that that doesn't look right, so when I look at it again, I've got 18 points. Well, with 4 and 2, I'm turning around, I'm like, how many points are we supposed to be getting here? 8 doesn't make any sense for 4 and 2. You can't divide that. And somebody says, well, it's 5. So I immediately go up to the judge's table and let them know, and they put me down wrong, and they just put their own points for me. So when they recalculated the points, I was 15th.
Oh, you did squeak in.
Skin your feet.
And I was happy with that. Obviously, I hated to knock out Mike Skousen from Ohio. That was the unfortunate part of it. But that put me playing Steve Simone from the DC meta, playing the Quentin deck. And I had no idea what they were playing because I didn't have a chance to play any of them all day. But when I sat down to play Steve, he had a good start. I think he had an Ariane early and just a lot of the basic good Martell stuff. And I think round 2 or 3, he dropped a Viper and got maybe a power or two on the Viper. And at that point, it's, you know, my deck's just warming up. It's trying to seed the discard pile and start playing things like Ambush from the Plains. And I had an Ambush from the Plains in my hand, no characters on the board, and he has knelt everybody out. And I'm looking at what is a pretty good board on his side. He doesn't have a Viper's Bannerman, and I'm really wanting to play Valor, but he's got Arion and he's got Red Viper on the table, and I'm looking at that going, actually, no, I don't think he did have Arion. I take that back. He dropped her later. But I'm looking at it going, Viper is probably important enough to him with this board because it's going to speed him up quite a bit. He's got maybe 6-7 power, something like that, by turn 2. And so I'd really like to take care of the Viper. And I've just so happened to have Pyat Pree in my discard pile. And that round, I purposefully made sure that I got up enough initiative to use Ambush from the Plains on him. And when I tried to use him on to bring him back in, Steve played his Paper Shield on me. And that was probably the turning point in my game because I had a Meraxes out and he didn't have a ton of draw. He did have a pair more or two throughout the game, but he didn't have any kind of regular draw. At one point he was top decking and I was getting cards a turn. But when he canceled the Ambush from the Plains, I was going to kill Viper, Valor, the other 4 or 5 characters that he had on the board the next turn. And, you know, I knew he was probably going to play Power of Blood the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
I figured they were running it because he had dropped Gaston Grey, and I figured that was probably a key part of their deck. So I was thinking, I really don't want to play Valor if he's going to play Power of Blood and save the Viper. And, you know, when he paper shielded that, I would have had Hypre back in my hand to play again on the Valor turn and possibly kill somebody else. You know, he didn't play a whole lot of characters because he wasn't drawing a whole lot of cards that next round. And because I couldn't play the Valor, I ended up going ahead and I had a Flame Kissed or two in my hand at that point, or either that or I drew into it on the next turn and drew into a second Flame Kissed. So I was able to get rid of Quentin, discard him on the threat from the north turn, and get rid of the Viper.
Nice.
Even though he did play Power of Blood. But that was quite inefficient because I could have already gotten rid of him with Pyat Pree. Then I would have wiped his board and been able to use Flame Kissed to kill the characters that he played, and probably Pyat Pree to kill the rest of his characters on the next turn. And then I drew into, with Meraxes on that next turn, I drew into a Hatchling's Fee, which I would have been able to wipe his board again on the next turn. And I had to play Hatchling's Feast at the end of that that threat from the north turn, which should have been the Valor turn. I really should have probably wiped his board two turns in a row there without the paper shield. So, in talking about this at the end of the game, he said, yeah, I just kind of threw that one paper shield in my deck before the day started, just kind of as extra insurance against all the events that the mirror match Quentin decks I'd be facing, possibly.
Wow.
Yeah, and it totally kills me.
What kind of luck is that?
1X events rule. I mean, talk to Will about Too Proud to Bow.
Oh, yeah, Will knows something about it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was pretty much the one card in the game that would have just shut me down that hard right then.
That was great. He said, damn it, when did you put that in?
So that was my Gen Con experience this year.
Tossit seems not to stop at.
Yeah, that's a good run.
Yeah. As Will Wentz would say, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Exactly.
And I will give props to FFG because this year they gave playmats to top 16. I don't know if they've ever done that before. I think top 8 is probably about the most they've ever done.
Yeah,
they usually don't give prizes to top 8. It's like if you win, you get something. If you get second, you get a little bit something less. And then everyone else gets magic.
Yep.
And they were pretty sweet looking ones, I have to say.
Yeah, I did like.
Well, cool. Thanks for the update there.
Absolutely.
So, Benton, now that it's all said and done, do you feel like there's something maybe that you should have put in your deck differently? Or like, what would you do differently now looking back on that whole tournament?
I'd probably put a third Golden Tooth Mines in there.
Not bad.
I can respect that.
And I'd like to test the deck with Westeros Bleeds. That would really hurt the Quentin decks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had Bleeds
in the deck in various iterations before. It's been in and out, but you know, I think that with that particular Quentin deck, it's going to have a hard time probably with an all-out control deck in a lot of respects. But nobody was running. There was hardly anybody running all-out control decks. Everything was aggro. And in an aggro environment, that's probably the best aggro deck out there. It's not killing a bunch of stuff, but it's got such efficient use of characters blended with the renown plus the high claim. It's a very well balanced deck.
You know, did that surprise anybody other than me that the field was still so aggro and rush leaning? I really thought after that last FAQ update it was going to swing the other way, which is why I felt like I would go ahead and give my treaty deck a go. And those first couple games had me really worried.
Yeah, I didn't expect to see that much aggro still. I mean, not that I was there, but been like looking at reports.
Yeah, I was really surprised too.
Do you think we'll see it swing by Worlds, or you think it's here to stay for the rest of the year?
I hope it's here to stay. I love aggro.
Yeah, I like aggro a lot, so I hope it's here.
I think we had decided we were gonna let some of the Gen Con stuff rest, except for this sweet new pack that got released and was available at Gen Con.
And immediately after Gen Con.
And that too.
I wouldn't know. I didn't make it into the FFG.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Having to wait in line just to enter the booth to look at games and stuff.
Yeah, that's that out. I was like, I can look at it online. I don't need to stand in line for 2 hours.
So we don't like to let new cards lie for too long. How about we give this one a run through?
Let's do it. The banners gather the perfect of the King's Road cycle.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
Maybe the most hyped cycle in a while. I can't think of any others that have had people this razzed up.
I think you're right. I think everyone's pretty stoked about this set.
And they're going to be let down by this pack.
You know, there's a few interesting cards.
There's a little synergy in there.
Yeah. Well, before we get rolling on what those are, though, maybe we ought to give the listeners a brief update on the rating system. Maybe not an update, really. We haven't changed anything, but a refresher for those mm-hmm. listening. It's basically based on U.S. Grading scales for, you know, classes, school. So it runs A, B, C, D, and F. Starting with the A's being just those standout all-stars. You're going to see this everywhere. And it potentially kind of warps the game cards all the way down to the F's, which are, well, F stands for fail or flunk, depending on who you talk to. Mm-hmm.
Those cards aren't so good.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we've definitely had some low balls. We've had some high ones since we started this rating system. So maybe we'll kind of see how it shakes out this time around.
All right. First up, we start with Baratheon, which, by the way, props FFG. The individual houses are organized alphabetically, which I love because I have a crazy brain. So Baratheon is the first half. Yeah, this starts with B.
That's thorough. Well, why don't you lead off then?
I'm leading off. We have a unique Barra character. He's Alistair Flournt. He's 3 cost, 3 strength, with a military and a power icon. He's a bannerman, which matters now. He's a lord. He has the text, any phase, discard a card from your hand to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets plus 3 strength during power challenges for each bannerman character you control, and has a holy crest.
I dig him fairly well. I'm a sucker for holy crests.
I know you are.
I'm a little bummed about this bannerman thing. This whole cycle was kind of built on, and I think everyone is so hyped about them returning to these previous themes and kind of building on them and stuff, and this interacts with the previous bannerman theme in no appreciable way whatsoever.
I mean, unless they're in play as characters.
Which kind of belies the point of those bannermen.
I mean, they start off in play, and then you attach them when you do things. You can attach them from your hand or play.
You can attach them from hand. So I never see anyone go ahead and bother to play them.
I know. I have played Banner for the Storms on more than one occasion.
That is
Sometimes you need a body.
Yes. You're Which probably means they're going to die to claim, doesn't
You're
it?
You're pretty desperate.
So what
do Yeah, I mean, I dig the. In for coolness factors, I dig the bannerman effects. The discard a card to do something. But
and depending on what we get for this command thing, it might be useful.
Yeah.
Not seeing enough in this pack to warrant that, but we'll get to that, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he's going to open up some options as far as like ditching cards out of your hand. Holy Crest is always sexy coming out of Baratheon.
Yeah. And I can use more ways to discard large out-of-house armies out of my hand for the army deck.
Especially on a house that has a plot that can let them play characters that are in their discard pile. So.
That's true. And aside from maybe Martell, who can just pitch, what's his buff, Darkstar, they're probably the best house to deal with having to discard cards from hand.
Yeah. So there's some obvious synergy.
Yeah. Overall, though, I really can't get this guy much more than a D right now.
A D?
I mean, he's
that bad for solid, like, cost of strength, icons, crest, and stuff? I feel like he deserves, and he's unique, relevant-ish traits. I feel like he's at least a C- to a C.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a C. I think he's going to have some neat interactions.
I'd bump him up to a C+, just for the art alone.
It is
not only
pretty studly.
Is he a silver-haired guy with a beard, but that armor is just the colors really pop on this card. I think the artist did a great job with it.
They're really stepping it up a notch lately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good job, Chris Pritchard. You did a good job, sir. All
right.
Daryl, what's next?
Next up, we have Brightwater Keep. is a Baratheon unique location that is one cost, is a stronghold, and is no attachments. It reads, response. After a card is discarded from a player's hand, kneel Brightwaterkeep to return that card to its owner's hand. We see some synergy there with Alistair Florent, and maybe some anti-intrigue tech. Mm-hmm. It's not bad, actually.
Between this and Laughing Storm, it's going to be really hard to discard cards from a Vera player.
Which is potentially pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, on an intrigue challenge where they pull two cards, do you just decide which card to bring back? Because it normally happens both at once, right? So you just get to pick? Is that how that works?
I would think, looking at it there, that's what I would think.
Okay. I mean, I guess it reads like that. I'm just making sure.
Yeah. For one gold, you're not investing much there. It's decent enough for setup. I don't mind it as an insurance plan. I've had a lot of games where I've had the one card I needed plucked on a lucky intrigue challenge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with this card, if you have it and you get to use it, you're basically just negating intrigue challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I like it just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a lot harder to get rid of than a character that... the Laughing Storm.
Yeah.
Speaking of Darkstar, how funny is that going to be?
Yeah, now that will be amusing. So, how does this work with the replacement effects here?
According to K-Tone, this can put Darkstar back into...
Right back in?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
This might be more play than we thought. Man.
Yeah. I'm all for that, then.
Oh, man. I would love to see a look on that guy's face.
Go ahead, Daryl.
I was just going to give a letter grade.
Okay.
I got something else to say.
I was going
to
give a letter grade also, but you got one first.
Indeed, I did. I really like this. I think it's going to be... I would assume it would be a fair amount of decks in a game where card advantage is a pretty big deal. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a B.
That's what I'm leaning towards myself. I don't think I'll play this in every deck, but there are a lot of bear decks where I could definitely see myself throwing in a copy.
Yeah, I'm going to echo the B. I do think I'll play probably a copy in a lot of my bear decks, at least a copy.
Yeah, I agree. I think B's probably a good place to land on it.
Alrighty. Daryl, you get to call the next reader. It's like we're playing popcorn here.
Go ahead.
I literally just said that.
Go ahead, Will.
Okay. Alright, next up is Into the Breach, a card that we've had spoiled for us before.
Yeah.
So I think we talked about it some. It's a neutral event, Siege and Tactic. It's any phase, put a Baratheon character into play from your hand. At the end of the phase, if that character is still in play, discard it. I mean, I like the any phase events that put characters into play. I'm a little bummed it's Bera characters only, since I like to play Bera and then use other houses' characters. But this does open up the possibility to play other houses and use Bera's characters.
Bera characters.
Yeah.
A Targ Jumper deck with Into the Breach?
Yeah, there's some possibilities. Because didn't we look before at using Ambush from the Plains to run some kind of Targ stuff out of house?
Yeah.
So I could see Into the Breach maybe allowing you to do some cool things. I don't know offhand what Vera characters I would want to jump in.
I've got a couple. Red Queen's Faithful, Shadow Stalker in a winter deck. How often have you not been mortified to try to play a Shadow Stalker from your hand? Four cost ally, F that ass. Put him in, blow some dudes up. I think it's going to be bad.
Any sweet tech or lack thereof that you're seeing there, JB?
Just, I don't know what they're doing, trying to kill us with Dale Seaworth.
Yeah.
But it's another card that works with Dale. It works with cannot be discarded stuff.
That's so great with Dale. And then it just dumps him in the discard pile afterwards so he can come back with Mel's schemes or another copy of himself. And it's any phase so that Robert can replay it and shuffle it again.
I think it's going to have a fair amount of surprise to Brad. I think it's going to see a good amount of play. I mean, Ambush from the Plane sees a fair amount of play. This has less restrictions than that.
Yep.
I mean, really, I think just on the back of Dale there, I think this puts this in like a B-ish, maybe even a B-plus category for me.
So I'm going to go C-plus. It's definitely a fine card, and it's really strong with Dale, but it's not a card that's on every bear deck. It's going to be in some dedicated, like, cool combo decks.
I think if you've got a fair amount of draw behind you, this card going to be pretty kicked. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a paddle B.
I'll say B minus.
And shucks, here I thought Jonathan was on the show so the listeners would have someone here telling us how horribly, horribly wrong we were.
Oh, we'll get there, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be something.
Okay.
There's plenty to be wrong about, hopefully.
We're going
to
be like triple F, and then they'll be like, this is an A-plus card, you're all stupid.
And it's going to be me in particular he's correcting.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, I think you're up next to read.
I believe so.
Are we on Gorald Goodbrother?
I think so.
He's a Bannerman and a Lord out of Greyjoy. 3 cost, 3 strength, military, and power. And he says, any phase, discard card from your hand to choose and nil X locations. X is the number of Bannerman characters you control.
You know, I actually do like this guy a bit. There's not a lot of location control. It's not just straight up blowing up locations. So he does give a little bit of variety, at the very least.
He's okay. You've already got a couple other Greyjoy cards with similar effects. Like, there's the Theon that
Theon's meets. The only one that does, really.
There's that event where you kneel a lord and then kneel X locations where X is his strength.
No.
I forget the name now.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, it sees zero play. At least Gorold is a new unique character and not overlapping someone useful like, say, Balin.
Another Basha.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think I especially in Greyjoy, if this was a different house that didn't already have a newly made lord and, you know, seized and things like that, I think I would be more interested in it. Say this was like Lannister or something, I would be like, oh, okay, I'd be willing to give that a shot. But out of Greyjoy, I'm not feeling it. I'm feeling like a D.
Yeah. Maybe this card is more of an answer to go along through the rest of the set. You know, we already see some decent locations early on with Brightwater Keep. So maybe. I don't know. In the current meta, I don't know if it has a place. Especially now, the best locations are restricted. But, you know, I could be wrong. But as he stands now, I'm just going to give him a D. I just don't see it. Right now.
Right now. Yeah. Got to hedge that bet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I'm giving great with some location control to options that aren't just destruction, I think I'll have to agree on that. I mean, he's pretty DE to me.
The problem is that I see with this guy is that it is a costly effect out of Greyjoy, a house that doesn't draw a ton of cards. And
they don't have the recursion to back it up either.
And, right. But if you could get a lot of Bannermen out, he could be absolutely brutal because everybody's playing reducers right now.
Yeah.
And they're not playing things that give you gold. So if you can imagine, a lot of games you're going to have a guy with a couple of streets and a palace fountains on the other side of the table, and he's in any phase. If you had 3 Bannermen on the table and could kneel those out before marshaling, that would add a whole lot to choke. But how many Bannermen, playable Bannermen we get. That's the question.
Yeah,
and
right now
I can
we see
this.
Him and the original, right?
Right.
I mean, unless you're playing a cool neutral rainbow Bannermen deck.
Oh, Sam.
Yeah.
Well, I would probably prefer playing maybe a Vera Greyjoy choke deck with Salador Saan and
there you go.
Winter. And maybe try to work in as many Bannermen as you could get like that. But
coward.
I mean, if you're already going that way and you've got access to Salador and the cheap smugglers and Newly Made Lord, what do you need Gorold for at that point? Like, what is still on the board that you couldn't hit that Gorold matters against?
Well, Salador's not the most consistent. He doesn't stay on the table very long, usually.
Yeah. So what rating would you give him then?
I'd probably give him a C. If we get more Bannermen and cheap Bannermen, we need cheap Bannermen for Greyjoy. I could see him going up, but
never know though.
Yeah.
Right, back around to me.
Yep.
Next up is another card we have had spoiled already. Not on this show, but it has been spoiled. It's a Hammerhorn, a one-cost unique Greyjoy location. It's a stronghold with no attachments, and the player with the most cards at his or her command at the beginning of the draw phase draws one less card to a minimum of one when he or she draws for that phase. I like this card very much.
You do or you don't?
Yeah. I don't.
Ah.
It has a very, very flashy effect. I mean, limiting people's like baseline draw for the turn is exceptionally powerful, but I mean, if you get this card going and you are cutting off your opponent's draw, it just means that you're drawing more, and eventually your Hammerhorn's going to start hurting you.
Yeah, that's the tough point, is it's always just going to equalize, like, given adequate time. You'll just even out with your opponent because of that.
I don't see a way to control it.
No, there's not. Unless you're donating your characters to your opponent.
Now, Greyjoy does have three characters that'll do that.
It's true. We're
friends.
Yep.
D minus.
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed. It's not a good card. Not an F. Not an F. There could still be some use, but it is.
I want to find something awesome with this. I just can't right now. Yeah, I'm gonna have to say and just give it a D.
Well, let's see what the next one is then.
No, I couldn't think of any tech for it. wait. No.
Oh, I think you can think of some tech for this next one.
Hopefully.
Oh shit. Okay. Next card is a Greyjoy attachment. It is Scaling Ladder, and it's one cost. It is a siege and item. And it says, attached to a location. While attached location is knelt, its controller cannot declare defenders during military challenges.
So you know what deck I want to play this card in, Will?
Siege of Winterfell?
Stark Siege of Winterfell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you going to play Gorold out of house in it so that you can kneel their location and then they can't defend?
I might have to.
I mean, that is a pretty cool little combo.
Mm-hmm.
Or synergy, one might say. I'm not sure. But is it going to be effective out of Stark Siege? Do they have any good ways to kneel that location?
Not really.
Dude, attack from the sea, brah.
You know, not completely unbearable.
Sure, I've read a bunch of epic battles. Open plot, attack from the sea.
And you know, it's just playing cannot defend, or cannot declare defenders during those military challenges. So it's not like challenge phase specific or anything. So if you could set up a pretty solid first turn, save an epic battle or two in your hand, drop that Scaling Ladder, and then second turn, attack from the sea and a couple epics.
Yep.
Or even play it if you're going second. Wait till then. The reducer.
Yeah, and then drop it on it. And then at that point, you're basically choking. I mean, worst case scenario, you're just choking them out of gold because they can't use that card anymore.
Right. It's not unbearable. You know, if you've already got like a Serio waiting in Shadows or something, you could probably go ahead and afford you can afford to go ahead and spend 3 gold on the Scaling Ladder. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be able to defend Serio at all, so he can just bounce back and forth all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's plenty of synergy, though, just in Greyjoy unopposed. I mean, I know that in Joust it hasn't been a particularly effective deck, but, you know, who knows? I mean, this is a good... could be a good answer.
Yeah, that could be fun in Melee. Hey, look, that guy's in the lead. Hey, he's got this Knelt location. I'm going to drop a Scaling Ladder on him. Who else wants to pile on him for military challenges this turn?
Yeah. Yeah, or you could even use that to bait other dudes into attacking him if you support and you've got some renowned dudes. I don't know. Get creative with it. It seems pretty fun.
It actually seems like a really cool attachment, I have to admit.
Bay of Knights sees a lot of play.
Yeah, there you go. And that's for sure going to be Nell every round.
Yeah.
Even potentially City of Shadows sees a decent little bit of play. Sorry, Kingdom of Shadows. City's the agenda, isn't it? Sees a good bit of play. And what are they going to do? Give up Intrigue Challenges?
Probably then you can do an Intrigue Challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Someone's going to win an Intrigue Challenge.
Yep.
So what are we feeling on this card, guys? What are we feeling on Scaling Ladder?
It's still an attachment and a little gimmicky, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'm feeling like a C+.
Wow. Pretty generous. Yeah, I was going to go C- strictly for the potential for Stark Siege.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a C as well. I mean, still fun, but the attachment still has to be met.
I'm kind of torn on it. I think it's going to make a lot of my fun decks, but I don't know how many competitive decks it'll stay in. So C is probably about right.
Okay. Well, let's see. Does that mean I'm up next, then?
You're up next.
All right, sweet. I get to move on to my favorite house. House Lannister with Mr. Daemon Marbrand. He's a unique Lanny character. 3 cost, 3 strength, intrigue and power icons. He's a bannerman and a lord. And any phase, discard a card from your hand to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets +3 strength during an intrigue challenge for each bannerman character you control. This sounds very familiar.
Except it's not a crest.
Yeah, exactly. Only he is slightly worse, which I'm not a fan of. I like that he's a new named guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, Lanny already is so dominant in intrigue challenges against anybody except Martell. That I don't know about running Daemon. He feels like overkill to me until I see more command effects that I want to ditch stuff out of my hand with. And if I want to ditch stuff out of my hand, I've always got, Clansmen-related things.
Yeah, pretty much anything I said about Alistair Florent can be said about Daemon Marbrand.
Yeah, I wish Daemon had a keyword. I would really dig him if he had, stealth or something.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a crest, man. Come on.
No. I mean, neither did Gorold, so... But Alistair Florent's just special.
He does have...
Yeah, but Gorold did something non-challenge related that made him somewhat more interesting to me. So, man, and he doesn't have the combo synergy quite as well. I mean, Lanny does have the Corrupt Counselor that you could play for 2 gold after discarding it to Daemon. But it's just not the same kind of synergy, so I'm feeling like a D for him.
Yeah, I mean, Lanny does have pretty solid draw that can help offset the cost of discarding your own cards, but yeah, D is where the fat's going to be.
I guess he's getting a D from me. Or an F. You know what? Fuck it. This guy sucks. F.
Daryl's done with hedging his bets.
There you go. I'm done. Please, I want to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
I mean, he's on an F card, so you're wrong.
Fuck that, man.
I really don't think he's that bad. I don't. Lannister has too many cards they can throw away. They have too much card draw to. You know, if you're saving yourself characters on the intrigue and winning with a weenie, that just leaves your other guys open to do whatever. So, I mean, he's not great, obviously, but maybe a C, C minus. I don't think he's a D character.
You're right. I'm gonna give him an A.
You know, I'm just gonna throw out there. You were mentioning saving characters. He can, you know, sort of there, but he's not saving you, you know, cards. If you're using it on defense, you're probably just choosing what gets lost to intrigue. If you're attacking on the intrigue, you're just getting card parity out of it most of the time. And there's just not as many, stuff that triggers off of winning intrigue by four or more just isn't as prevalent, maybe I should say. Though it is worth pointing out, I guess, that he can help you surprise trigger wars or one with quills or something
terminal
like that.
Schemes.
Yeah, terminal schemes. But I think winning the power challenge by four or more with Alistair, so I can seductive promise their character, is going to feel a whole lot better to me.
Well, maybe old Bannerman or Austin could run that Brightwater Key on me. Who knows? Or maybe, you know, maybe this is the equalizer where we see Flaming Pitch Tower played again. Because I've been toying around with that idea.
There you go. Out of house Flaming Pitch Tower. Or out of house Bannerman, depending.
You love me some Flaming Pitch Tower.
All right, what do we have next? I think Mr. Bitten is up.
Yeah, we have Ashmark is a one cost Lannister location, stronghold trait, and any phase. Discard a card from your hand to add one gold token from the treasury to your gold pool. Limit three times per phase.
Wow. Screw you, Golden Tooth Vaults.
Yeah.
It is so unique.
It has a mini combo that doesn't actually accomplish anything, but with Ashmark and Dragonbone Dagger, you can discard your Dragonbone Dagger to get a gold back, putting your Dragonbone Dagger back three times per phase.
There you go.
That's cute.
If you're running Zero's Home out of house, and you have three influence available, you draw three cards.
Don't you have to play the attachment to draw cards with that, though?
Yeah.
Damn it.
You're just discarding.
Never mind. Nope, I got nothing then.
Yeah, I thought Son of the Mist for a second, but you have to play the last card you're in for that, not discard.
Yeah. Too bad Lannister doesn't have a character that says when you discard the last card out of your hand, he claims a power.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything like that, do they?
I don't think so.
Not quite.
But it would rule if they did.
Maybe
they do. It's the clansman guy. Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah, that's the sound of us. You have to play the last card out of your hand.
You have to play it? I thought it was when it gets discarded.
No, you have to play.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah, otherwise that would have been rad.
There's got to be some synergy somewhere.
I mean, it's gold on demand just in case, but, you know, honestly, I would probably play a moneylender or a weaponsmith or a counselor over Ashmark for my gold needs until some sort of interesting combo stuff appears that I'm not seeing.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, it's got to be something deeper in the set as far as maybe there's going to be stuff that triggers off whenever you discard a card, you know, this happens. I mean, you know, not just like discard a card to make this happen, just like when this is discarded, kind of like, you know, Brightwater Keep will return to hand. Maybe there's something that'll give a character plus two strength, or, you know, take an icon.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You do have that option in Martell. So, you know, maybe it's something we look at out of house. I don't know. Three gold then.
Round in plum, two cost, zero strength, strength ally, traitor.
Always a great card.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Dude, guys, Ashmark kind of sucks.
Yeah.
For now, this is what freaks me out about doing like the first pack of a set, because we don't know where exactly they're going.
Yeah, but yeah, it's hard to say for sure.
In a vacuum, Ashmark, not so hot.
Yeah, it's a D minus.
I think I'm gonna agree with that for now.
just going to go ahead and give it a B.
I'll give it an A plus. First plus I've ever given. I'm just kidding, it's a B. Okay, I'm gonna...
Alright, well, next up.
Wait, what did Ben give it?
D minus, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I agreed with Brett, whatever he said.
That's a good way to live your life. Next up, we have a car that I will affectionately refer to as a Trebucket due to a inside joke from high school. Mispronouncing the word trebuchet. That's a one-cost Lannister location. It's a siege and a weapon. And then any phase, this card trebuchet for play to give each of your participating characters plus X strength until the end of the challenge. X is the number of cards in your hand.
Can I just say that art looks gorgeous? I really love that art.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all right. You know, if I want an easy way to trigger...
Make an example.
Yeah. That's... Trebuchet's pretty much going to do it by itself.
I mean, if you have a trebuchet in play, it's hard to not be able to just, like... win a challenge. Like, you also have to force, like, an overcommitting of blockers on a challenge just to get the trebuchet out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a pretty huge threat of activation there, then.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty cool. But,
Yeah, and it gives each participating character plus mm-hmm. X strength. And that's pretty fat. So I think we're going to see some melee love for this, at least.
Yeah. It's a neat card, but I can't see it being better than a C. I mean, it is probably going to win you a challenge, but that's pretty much all it's going to do is just win you a challenge. And there's a lot of other strength buff cards that will still also win you a challenge. That aren't telegraphed.
I don't think it plays into Lanny's strengths as far as... it's definitely not a control card.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely an aggro card, and... I just don't know that they need any more help to win challenges in their aggro version. They just need help keeping people alive. And
this does not help with that.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna give it a C minus. Final answer.
I just don't think I'm gonna really play it. Is the bad thing? So like a D plus, unfortunately, despite being an interesting ability.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice pump, but...
I can't think of anything that pumps quite like it.
Oh, yeah.
Like that large pump.
Dude, what you need to do is play this card with out of house with We Take Westeros to deck your opponent one turn.
Oh my god, we need to build this deck. Can we work on that?
We can work on that, Will.
Okay.
Oh god.
Wow, that just made my night, Brett. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Just a little shaga at me.
All right. So are we good for the next card, then?
I think so.
Yeah, I'd give it a something.
A something.
Yeah, sure. You know what? No, just because we can do that, it gets a B. It's a Daryl B.
A Daryl B, which is like
the equivalent of like a Will D.
Which is like a bitten.
Pretty much the same.
F.
It's most certainly a bitten F. But surprisingly, a Xyler B.
Yeah. Alright. Who's next? I
believe it's you. Isn't it?
No. I just read Trebuchet.
Oh, my apologies. It's Daryl.
Oh, it's me. Yeah. Okay.
It is.
Next up, we've got a Martell character by the name of Edric Dane. He is unique, 3-cost, 3-strength military intrigue. He is a Bannerman and House Dane. He reads, any phase, discard a card from your hand to choose X characters. Until the end of the phase, those characters gain immune to events. X is the number of Bannerman characters you control. Play the other one.
You know,
I don't know.
That's a sweet said for this tool for the bleeds. Yeah. That's the Hollow Hill decks.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends. I mean, there's Martell's name of this house has like what one other bannerman that's not the actual banner itself. They have the House Dane guy that gives all House Dane guys plus one strength.
Possibly.
I mean, yeah. He is a bannerman. I'm trying to think of someone of.
Okay.
House Dane's coming back, baby.
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely some options there if I can keep, you know, few key characters on my side of the board to go with the Viper, you know, Ariana and Ilaria, for instance, which is pretty much my personal trifecta of awesome. That seems like a good thing.
Should be cool. I mean, outside of that, he doesn't have a lot of application. He's pretty much a protect yourself in your own bleeds card.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's more interesting of an effect than just the challenge.
Yeah, a strength bump.
Yeah, and Martell does have some ways to mitigate that discard. Of course, the Dark Star, and things open like Open Market. Yeah, Prince's Plans. So,
it's probably a stupid question, but if you use his ability to put Dark Star into play, can you choose Dark Star with the effect?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, you could.
Can you?
Why wouldn't you? You discard it from your hand. Dude, I would look at my own hand with What's-Her-Nuts, the Ghost of High Heart, and discard that bitch all the time.
Do cards being discarded from an out-of-play zone go Moribund transition?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so he is just instant into play then. He's not Moribund during the resolution of Edric Dane's ability. Like the Dane girl with influence that discards herself when she's used for influence, she stays Moribund through the duration of whatever you knelt her for.
You see, the question is, do cards become Moribund when they're entering play? Which, and I think the answer is no.
Okay. That's just what I want to make sure. So he would be instant in play is what we're saying.
I believe so. I could be totally wrong, but I believe so.
Okay. Then I would guess that you could choose him.
Yeah, you could choose
him. Okay, just wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the feelings on Edric Dane?
I'm feeling a little better about him because, you know, I still think that's a fairly strong deck, and giving them another tool to play with is pretty good for them. So I'm feeling like a B-.
Impressive. I just had a soft spot for House Dane, so I'm going to give it a C.
I'm leaning toward a C-.
Yeah, I'm actually leaning toward, I mean, as much as I was talking about this card, I'm leaning towards a D+, honestly. I mean, he's basically, you're trading him and a card from your hand to protect another more important card from Westeros Bleeds. Because he's going to get this card unless you discard a card specifically for him to protect him from that same Bleeds. So, yeah,
I mean, it'd be nice to, like, if you're playing Westeros Bleeds, choose your own dudes, you know, and then Westeros Bleeds, and then you just wipe your opponent's board and you get to keep your characters.
That's what we've been talking about, Daryl.
Yep.
I know. I'm just saying, there's some application there.
I don't know. I guess part of me, not to sound like a Daryl over here, but I guess it all depends on if Martell gets some more good bannermen for the rest of the cycle.
Yep.
All right. William?
Well, next up, we've got Southron's Stronghold. It's a Martell unique location for one. It's a stronghold in House Dane, and any phase, discard a card from your hand to stand Southron's Stronghold.
I'm going to say one thing real quick.
Yeah.
Every house got a unique named castle.
Yeah. Why does this
Martell
one not have a name?
Generic Southron Stronghold, which is just unique. Like, it's the only stronghold in the South.
Yeah, yeah, that bugs me as well. But, on the other hand, any non-Knights of Hollow Hill Martell deck might be interested in this. It's at the absolute worst, it's basically another chamber, which is...
Yeah, it's a second Lord Doran's Chambers.
Yeah, which is pretty rad. I dig the influence to cost ratio, or the resource to cost ratio there. So I'm definitely gonna play the heck out of it in Martell, you know, even if I'm not necessarily trying to think up any combos or anything. Though it's nice to have the option to stand it if you need more influence.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like it.
What was that?
I really like it.
Yeah.
I think it's solid. If you're trying to play any kind of influence in Martell, and granted, not every Martell deck is focused on influence, but they kind of need some good cards that will help that out. And of course, there are some fun little combos that you can pull with it.
Yeah,
I'll see your Brightwater Keep, and after you put my Dark Star back in hand, I'll just pop him right back in.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's real good. Real good.
So it's also Hastane.
It is Hastane.
Hastane rules.
So that's not Starfall, is beyond.
Yeah. I may never know, but maybe so that you could also play it along with Starfall in the deck.
And then stop them from making multiples of uniques before, Will.
What's that?
And then stop them from making multiples of uniques before, though.
Oh, yeah. Touche, salesman.
Yeah, I think this will make a lot of Martell decks. Anything running influence. That's a Hollow Hill. We'll want to use this, I think.
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say maybe even a few Knights of Hollow Hill with if they want to try to use the effect. So
yeah, exactly. I mean that puts it in a fairly solid B+ range to me. It's not like a game breaking effect, but it's just so solid. I see a copy going everywhere.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. It's not a spectacular card, and like Will said, I don't think very often I'd really care about triggering the effect, but just for being a second chamber, it's good.
Yep.
It's a B for me.
All right. Mr. Benton, are you up next?
We have Poisoned Well, also a Martell. This one, an attachment. It's a siege attachment, zero cost. It has a response effect. After attached location's effect is triggered, return it to its owner's hand.
That is some awkward location control.
Yeah. Ooh. Like the world's worst location control.
I don't know. I don't know what to think.
I mean, Martell does have some in-house location control.
Yeah. It's bounce for locations.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of that many locations, though, that I just want to temporarily bounce like that, though.
Well, maybe you do in your Martell, whatever that Martell choke deck is you ran. Right?
Maybe. No.
Can't even make it into that?
Probably not, no. You know, if it canceled that ability and returned it to hand... Mm-hmm. Maybe, but they still get whatever it is, and it does essentially no good at all against reducers, because they still get the reduction, and then it's probably zero cost and not limited, so they just replay it.
Unless you play it on your own.
yeah, which does offer a slight bit of application for some double reducing, but I don't know, I don't think it's worth me blowing a card.
No.
What about Rainus' Hill? At a house, huh? Not have to... No?
Wait, what?
Can't you do that, like, with Rainus' Hill? You bring it back to land? Am I thinking...
No, it goes more of a discard.
Yeah.
And then it can't change. It's more of a direction. Yeah.
If this was a replacement effect and you could do some tricks like that...
Right. Yeah.
Then it would be pretty cool, but... No.
Sadly not.
I'm
feeling pretty strongly in the D range for this card. Maybe even as low as a D-.
That's again, what I'm feeling.
I'm not willing to give it the full on F, but
it is location control for a house that didn't have it. I'll say that much. That keeps it out of the F range for me, but it doesn't go above the D-.
Yeah.
Nobody mentioned getting a burned and pillaged off of your location, did we?
No.
Or frozen solid.
Awful location that can trigger.
Well, right.
Frozen solid's
not going to help. Yeah.
Frozen solid on my Gaston Gray, that's probably the best application I can figure out for this card.
Well, but it won't work because you can't trigger Gaston Gray.
Right. That's right. Shoot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Burn and Pillage, though, that one works. Or what's the Wild Lane one? No, because it blanks, too.
Yeah, Climbing Spikes blanks.
Ooh.
Maybe somebody smarter than me can figure out something to use this for.
I don't know.
Maybe something later on in the set. Who knows? I don't know.
Right now it is looking in the D range.
Yeah.
It's very Nedley. I like the effect as far as the name of it and everything, but not very useful.
All right, moving out of the Martell territory into the Starks, we have the Stark Bannerman, Mors Umber. He's going to follow the standard 3-cost, 3-strength bicon, again, a military and a power. He's a Bannerman, and he is House Umber. With a assured effect any phase, discard a card from your hand to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets +1 strength for each banner character you control.
Whee!
Yeah, that's more enthusiasm than I can build up for this card.
Yeah, I mean, he does at least apply in any challenge, which I think I like more than the specific stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But 1 strength is not impressive, and he doesn't have the crest or anything. So I feel, I guess, overall about the same with Mors as I did with Damon. And Stark doesn't have any synergy with the discard pile.
No, except, they also don't have the draw to support it.
Yeah, except for, what's-his-face, lets you search your discard pile if you would search your deck, but there aren't that many deck searches for them anymore. So, yeah.
I guess, is it worth a 2-for-1? If you're trying to work with maybe any of the new event where you kill a character with higher strength than costs, you know, you give it to your opponent's character. I don't know. There's probably something around there, right? Like pumping your opponent's character up and then fucking them up.
It's possible, but with Dale, that's not a 2-for-1. That's what we call a 1-for-2, which is like a 2-for-1, but way worse.
Yeah. Depending on the character, though, say you're knocking off an Asha with 8 power on her, maybe it's worth it.
I mean, anything's possible in Christmas Wonderland.
Yes.
He's not very good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bright water keep out of house.
Okay, yeah, same discussion there applies. Do we have anything better, new?
Everything's better with Brightwater Keep.
I don't have anything new to say about this card.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
No. G?
Moving on, then.
It's a C, because I think he's... I don't know.
Because he's a Daryl.
He's a Daryl. All right, next is a Stark location. 1-cost Northland Keep. It is a stronghold. It says any phase, Neil Northland Keep, to choose a participating character with a higher strength than printed cost. Remove that character from the challenge.
I actually do kind of take this card in theory.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some cards that have higher strength than print cost that you could just remove from the challenge. They don't stand or anything. They don't get to get used again. They're just out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are some people that like to use some of the strength buff attachments and such.
True. Especially out of Martell. I can see
If a melee character gets their melee buff, then you can kick them out with Northland Keep almost certainly.
Maybe.
Well, for anyone except for the Spar and Dagos, right?
Depends on the cages you're defending with.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It does a little bit, but just kind of...
kind of. I mean, apprentice collar turned Big Blue will usually guarantee a Northwind key being turned on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you, if your opponent's playing any kind of strength buffs, it's just going to turn on your Northwind key.
Yeah.
Almost definitely.
Yeah. Or maybe, yeah, or maybe you use your Iron Link to give a guy plus two strength and just knock him out on the regular.
Daryl does love that link.
He does.
Dude, I love it.
Yeah, there's some options. Or use your own Bannerman, like, say, Morzumber to pump them.
That's right.
Not a great use of dropping your card for that, but it's possible.
Well, there's a little location known as Pintoshi Manor that is twice as good as this card will ever be. But
more than twice.
The idea still remains the same, you know? Removing characters from challenges and not standing them is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it is.
You could get a, you know, if you could get a repeatable buff on the board, it could be decent.
And there's still, you know, the characters floating around, the Boatswains, and I know Bosuns, but whatever. And the Lost Spearmen and things like that.
Yeah, there are some. The super efficient lots of strength characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes me dig the keep overall.
Yeah, I'm feeling a C.
This plus the event, you might have the makings of a deck if you put the, what's that neutral location that makes everybody plus three strength while they're, while they're standing.
Yeah.
It's not going to help with this, but it's going to help with the event, and mm-hmm. I don't know how competitive it's going to be, but I think it's got some possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of applications that you were probably not thinking about off the top of your head. Things like, he calls it thinking, a lot of cards that see a lot of play.
Yeah, that's actually a decent point there. Or You Killed the Wrong Dwarf. Not Good Grief, not You Killed the Wrong Dwarf, sorry.
Yes.
Even Insidious Ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's something I was thinking of. With Longship Iron Victory, can you choose an opponent's character to get plus two strength?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it? Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe we can discard it from our hand with, like, one of these Bannerman dudes, like, Iron Lore that shit back into play. Let's go around and around.
Yeah.
Let's move on out of that.
Agreed. Did we give all the right keep a rating? Did everybody do that?
I mean, I see that.
Yeah. All right. Was that one Daryl? Is it back around to me?
Yep.
Alright, I get another sweet siege event. Breaching the Wall. This one is House Stark only. And it's a limited response after you win a military challenge. Choose and kill any number of characters with higher strength and printing costs that are controlled by the losing opponent. Limit one limited response per round. We kind of touched on this one in the previous discussion, and I had kind of forgotten about King's Ground, I believe is the name. No, or King's Pavilion, isn't it?
King's Pavilion, yeah.
Yeah, till Jonathan mentioned that a moment ago, and that's pretty friggin' sweet.
It is cool. I agree. Just a board nuke for standing characters.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anything without the appropriate icon, basically. Because otherwise they'll just have to kneel out all of their dudes with military icons to defend. Like, if you've got that that pavilion out and you're making a military challenge, don't they pretty much just always have to assume that you have the Breaching the Wall in your hand?
Yeah. They can at least save some of their characters by kneeling them.
Yeah, so they have to kneel all of them with military icons to defend. And then they just open themselves
what if they
up.
Can't? King's
what's that?
Pavilion plus underhanded assassin. Oh snap! Best worst idea ever. Doing it.
And Daryl's had of a lot of those.
Yeah.
So I'm building that deck, baby.
Yeah, I think Breaching the Wall is going to be a very very strong event.
I agree.
That's going to shake people up.
with more wildlings coming later, I could see wildlings making a comeback, and this is going to be awesome against wildlings.
Mm-hmm. Blow the fuck out of some wildlings.
I think this is definitely better than the location. This is much more terrifying in its application. It kills any number of them.
Yep.
Man, it
gets a million
kills every deck, but it's so impressive. I feel like giving it like an A-.
Really?
Am I crazy?
You're crazy. No. I was leaning towards a B-, personally.
Yeah, I was thinking B. It's good. It's a good card. I like it a lot.
I'm going to roll some dicks with you. I'm going to go ahead and give it an A also.
Thank you, Daryl.
Civilian and Underhand Assassin is happening. And I also have to win initiative and go first.
Yeah.
And they also can't throw a flame kiss or something very small minute onto my Underhanded Assassin with you guys. But if all those things work out, and there can't be a Venomous Blade in the shadows. But if all those things work out, I will wipe your board. And I have to play, my first plot is going to be the, spend 5 gold for him. I'm going to do that.
Keep working on that.
JB, what's up next?
If Sir Raymond Derry, he's a Targ Knight Bannerman. He's the Targ version of the Bannerman guys that discard cards. He's three cost, three strength, military power. And any phase, he discards a card from your hand to put an attachment of X or lower into play from your hand. X is the number of Bannerman characters you control.
All right, you've wowed me with some interesting application I hadn't seen before on a couple other cards. Wow me on this one, JB.
I got nothing.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
What? Control 4 Bannermen. Horn of Dragons is ambushed into play. They will do some other crazy shit to turn their dudes into dragons.
You don't need that many, Daryl, because it'll just go off of printed cost.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, see?
So you just need 2 Bannermen.
What's
but
like the most
still.
Fast attachment ever to play at a house? And then we can do it. Or like surprise, no influence, ambush in a fucking flame kiss.
You can order
Hashtag YOLO.
Anything you can already ambush, I don't think I'd fiddle with. And I can't think of many other things I would really want to ambush in except for Scaling Ladder.
Yes, guys. Something.
Yeah.
You better have drawn all your Golden Tooth Mines if you're going to be discarding cards to do that.
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty poorly about Sir Raymond. I'm feeling the D range again.
No way.
Yep.
Noticing the theme.
The only thing keeping him out of that range for me is the fact that he does allow you some potential out of pass attachment shenanigans. Because I was looking really hard at giving this guy an F before I read over him again.
Mm-hmm.
He has Derry in his name, so I'm going to have to give him a B. Shit, yeah.
All right. Daryl's grades continue not being relevant.
What?
What? I didn't say that.
There's some application somewhere in there.
Not really.
Oh, I'll find it. I will find it, and I will beat you with it.
Next up. We have the Targ Stronghold. This is Castle Derry. It's unique, zero cost, and a stronghold. This one is immune to plot card effects, specifically only plot card effects. And at the end of the standing phase, claim 1 power for your house if you control more attachments than each pump.
Well, I found my house of dreams.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, and that makes sense for Mr. Derry Lloyd, which I don't think we've brought that up again recently enough.
We have not.
Probably not. What, you want me to tell
them? I think most of the listeners know.
Okay,
good. But hey, with this card, you can get a 15-turn clock going.
Exactly. You know, I'd throw a copy in the King Viserys deck.
Like, I'd throw a couple copies in there.
Yeah. Well, maybe you just House of Dreams that action.
Dude, dreaming it, man.
But really, overall, it's not... Not very good.
No, it's not.
That 1 power a turn is not going to add up real well since it doesn't do anything else. So what kind of rating do we give to something like that?
D.
Yeah, I mean, it is power game, so hard time to give a power game card much worse than a D, but it's not, definitely not any better.
I mean, if Grit doesn't see play, this shit's not going to see play. Hell.
Yeah.
That's just pretty bad.
We should always do an episode that's like, at the end of the cycle, what do you think about a card? What happens if there's some card that's like, claim 5 power, reclaim 1 power during dominance?
Well, it wouldn't do anything with this card because this is at the end of the standing phase. Yo, you're up.
Oh, God. Okay, next up is Rain of Fire. Play only if you control at least one printed dragon character. It says challenges. Discard all attachment cards from play. Then discard the top card of your deck for each attachment discarded by this effect.
That's interesting.
I do like that it can help lift up your discard pile for some additional attention. That's sort of the way that you could plan out to the top however many cards of your deck for it.
Shade of the Evening, depending on how deep you're going to be going. But yeah, I don't know. It's some mass attachment control.
Yeah, it'll mess up some maesters, probably.
Yeah.
Pretty fat.
It definitely can throw maesters for a loop. Though, right now, those seem to be, you know, mainly out of Targ.
Yeah. You have to have a legitimate dragon, which is
That's a bummer.
Sometimes it has to be said that
no telling stories that people are dragons and then raining fire on Earth.
Man, I'm just having a hard time wanting to give this card much better than another D.
Yeah, I really think most of the Targ's other attachment control is going to see play long before this one.
Yeah,
I agree. Jarrell?
Golly gee whiz. Well, being able to discard all attachments is kind of cool, so I'm going to give it a C.
Fair enough.
Alright. Is it back to me then?
William, it is.
Alright, we've got an event. Storm the Gate. It is another siege and tactic. This one is Dual House, Raytheon, and Greyjoy, and in Dominance, kneel 3 influence or pay 3 gold to discard all kneeling characters from play. Which actually seems pretty rad.
Yeah.
Dope.
Both Vera. Of them have a few ways to stand, guys. Vera definitely has more. Yeah.
Non-kneelers.
Yeah, we're non-kneelers. Plus, I mean, just playing, you know it's coming, and the other person doesn't, so you can tailor your challenges as you need.
Or, I mean, you make them go first. You're playing, that's the Hollow, you know, Barrow Ridge, that's the Hollow Hill, you make them go first, you make no challenges, and then storm the gates.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so flexible there, the influence or gold cost, and it's a fairly low cost for what is certainly nailing, three characters, so, probably at the minimum.
Probably a good number of characters. I mean, it's basically, I mean, in the powerhouse that is Greyjoy and Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, well, I mean, it's Westeros Bleeds 4, 5, and 6.
Both houses can make a holy deck and run Power of Faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true.
And I love holy decks.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, this is arguably the flash, I mean, between this and Rain of Fire, arguably the flashiest card in the entire pack.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pretty big one. And I'm feeling about the same about it, as far as being, you know, like an A-.
I'm not sure if I'd go that high, mostly because, I mean, I guess being able to pay the 3 gold does give some flexibility that a card like Westeros Bleeds wouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, and it gives you another tool for putting together some kind of Greyjoy character light business with the warship locations, turning into characters and all that sort of thing. So
there's already one of those out there, and it's actually not bad, and this would probably make it even better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at that point, you can be running six resets in the deck, plus at least, what, two solid plot ones, plus some okay plot ones, depending on how you want to do this or that. So,
I'm not even sure if I like that or not.
I don't know. I'm still feeling like I'm gonna give it a C+. It is. I mean, it'll see play in some very specific decks.
Mm-hmm.
And just for that reason, I just can't get much more than that.
Yeah, in a normal air quote deck, I'd like to test this and see how easy it is to build a deck around this and consistently be able to play it while you're still trying to pay for all your other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of potential, though.
It does have that.
Boy, does it.
Maybe Vigilance will be a thing again. I don't know.
With this, there's a chance.
I shall give it a Daryl A.
Love it.
I'm going to go with a B, but it could move up. It could move down too, though.
we reserve the right to be wrong at any moment and change our minds.
Always.
It's a good right to have.
Are we at the last card?
We are the last card, Mr. Benton, and it is yours.
We have Rally Cry, which is a plot that says, when revealed, I should probably say that it's 3 gold, 0 initiative, and 1 claim. And those are some below average stats, so let's see if the text redeems it. When revealed, choose and discard one character or location with cost X or lower controlled by the player with the most cards at his or her command. X is the combined number of plots in all players' used piles. We've seen this one for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's one that I think is a little bit hard to wrap your brain around when you don't know exactly how many at your command cards are coming.
Maybe not many, since this was the debut pack, and they surprised us with one. Well, sorry,
two.
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 Kind of forgot the other one existed.
For what it's worth, it's better than Hammerhorn.
It is. You know, it's going to be a mess in Melee, though. Yeah, every turn. How many cards does everyone have in hand?
It's going to be crazy in Melee. I mean, on turn two, you can kill something that's cost 4 or lower.
Yep. It's still going to be pretty good, I think, in Joust.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a catch-up card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, a deck like a Knights of the Hollow Hill deck is probably going to like it just fine. Probably not until turn 3-ish, probably. But on turn 3, we'll knock out a cost 4 or lower character. That's most relevant characters.
Yeah, they'll dig it pretty well. Even, it's kind of funny. House of Dreams is in a similar place of being a little behind on setup and stuff, mm-hmm. and liking this kind of card. But the flip side is, it also punishes House of Dreams pretty hard.
It'll knock out House of Dreams location.
So, I mean, between this and the city plot, and that epic battle hammering House of Dreams, they're up against an awful lot lately.
I mean, at least the epic battle doesn't see much play.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not sure if Rally Cry will see much either. I'm not feeling spectacular with this card.
It sucks for aggro decks.
Yeah, anything that's used out a bunch of characters is pretty much just always going to be... not like it's so good.
Unless they cleared out their hand. I mean, don't forget the command is...
That's
you know,
true, yeah.
Stuff in play. What stuff in play in Shadows and in hand?
Yeah,
I just think you're not going to have as many chances to use it in an aggro deck. Unlike a Knights of Hollow Hill deck or a control deck that can start slow, you know, it just seems like you're going to be hammering the other character or the other player if, with military challenges and wiping their board too often in an aggro deck, usually. So, might not be able to use it as often. Would you rather have this, or would you rather have another two-claim plot that you can keep the pressure on with a high initiative maybe to go first and pull out the win?
Yeah.
I'll take the two-claim plot, please.
Yeah, I think so, you're right.
Yeah.
If both players have the same amount of cards at their command, does this just not go off? Or does it go off twice? Like, what exactly happens?
I mean, no one has the most cards at their command.
Yeah, nothing. It fizzles.
Okay. So just nothing happens. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so what are we feeling on Rally Cry? Are we going to attack strong?
You know, I'm gonna end it on strong-ish. I'm feeling like a C plus. Targeted plot based removal, I still think is pretty strong option.
Oh yeah, definitely. It won't see it probably play in the vast majority of decks, but it'll see a lot of play. I think it's probably a good solid B. If the stats were higher, it would be an awesome plot.
Oh, absolutely.
The stats are pulling it down.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards a C personally. I think most of the time I'd probably just rather have a good two-claim plot.
Well, I would give it a C as well.
Alright, so that's our review of The Banners Gather, the first pack of the King's Road cycle. Let us know if you agree, disagree, or just like the sound of our voice. You can either let us know on the page on CardGameDB, our Facebook page. You can email us at twochamps1chump@gmail.com, tweet at us. So just let us know. Tell us we're stupid, tell us we're right. Whatever you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Props and flops. I have a single prop this week. I'm just going to get one out of the way early because I only have one prop. I don't really have any slops.
Sure thing.
It is to a Netflix show that's been getting a good amount of...
Oh, is it the one I think it is?
Press on my Facebook, at least. Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
Yep, Alicia and I started watching that a couple of nights ago, and it is really, really good. For some reason, I thought it'd be, for some reason, just in my mind, I thought it'd be a comedy, and there's definitely some funny parts, but it's absolutely like a fairly serious drama at some point. So that kind of shocked me. I don't know why I thought it was gonna be like a funny comedy, but it's not really that.
Comedy.
Oh, okay.
There are definitely comedic elements and funny parts, but it is a drama.
Okay. I have one slot, and that is to this Final Fantasy XIV I've been installing. I started off with an estimated 1,500 minutes until it was downloaded.
Wow.
Yeah, I started downloading around like 8-something. It is now 11:48, and it is at 31%, with an estimated 479 minutes.
Hey, good, man.
Less
than 10 hours.
I will be able to play this game that I just bought tonight, tomorrow morning. Can't wait.
Good luck.
Don't forget there's also going to be patches tomorrow after the first day of the game.
There absolutely will be. It's going offline from 2 to 9. Oh. And I can't wait to get up in the morning, get excited to play, and patch for another, like, 1,500 minutes. Very excited. So, thank you. This is what I get for trying to find MMO on PS3.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's a rookie mistake.
Mistake.
I have some props.
Okay.
While we're on Netflix shows like Brett was on, have you guys heard of Mac Taylor by any chance?
No.
It is in my instant queue. And it has Sir Jorah Mormont.
It has
Okay, I think I have
almost finished with the first series. It is quite solid. It's not Luther, but it's very good.
Mm. Like not much will be Luther, though.
Right, exactly. Anybody heard of the book called Wool?
I had some friends talking about that just this weekend, actually.
Very cool sci-fi book. If you like sci-fi at all, you should probably check that out. And third and finally, there was a whole host of games I picked up at Gen Con, but I have to tell you guys about one called Space Cadets Dice Duel. And I don't know if it'll appeal to everybody out there, but that game is quite the blast to play. And just let me give you a brief description. You have two teams. You can play it 2 versus 2 or 3 versus 2. You can play it all the way up to 4 versus 4, which in and of itself I think is really cool because there's not a whole lot of board games out there that can play like that.
Supports a lot of players.
Yeah, it supports a lot of players, and that team aspect of it is really cool. And you do have to work as a team. You have both teams have a spaceship that start off on opposite corners of the board. It's played in real time. You have all kinds of consoles sitting out, and depending on how many players is how many people have to run different consoles. If you have 4 people, one person can stand back and be the captain and be watching as the other ship is moving and seeing where they put their shields, and it's all done with dice. You're rolling dice as fast as you can. Engineering rolls 6 or a certain number of 6-sided dice, and if they come up on certain numbers, he can pass them down the line to his other members of the team, which start rolling their special dice, and then they're rolling for their shields cons, and they need certain symbols to put the shields on the front of the ship or the side or the rear of the ship. And then, you know, you want to pass some down to the weapon so they can load the torpedo bay, and you want to pass some down to the tractor beam so that they can be grabbing energy or moving the opposing ship around. And then when you got your torpedoes loaded and you've got the guy in range and you have enough the tracking icons to tracking dice to go past their jamming dice, you yell fire 1 or fire 2 depending on how many torpedoes you've got loaded. And as soon as that happens, everything stops. You calculate damage, you see if you're in range, and as soon as that's over, you go back to real time. It is fast, frantic, furious, crazy. But it is so much fun.
That does sound kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like the real-time aspect.
Very different, but we had a blast playing it at Gen Con. The more players, the better, because if you do a 2 versus 2, you better be really good at multitasking. You've got a lot of crap to keep track of. But you're going as fast as you can. Whoever can roll the dice the fastest and get what they need and get everything in position. We had one of the players in our group. We took away the keys to the spaceship because he could not drive. He kept going in circles, and it's really easy to do if you're not paying attention, and you have to get the right movements and get it all plotted out. And it's hilarious.
Oh, no.
What was it called? Space Cadet?
Dice Duel.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, anything?
You know, I haven't done anything exciting or different. My Doctor Who watching has slowed down this week because I've taken care of some other stuff. So I'm just going to prop the Silver Fox for joining us this week.
I'll echo that prop.
Thanks, guys. Had a great time, as always. Yeah,
thanks for being on, man.
Always glad to have you. Well, thanks for listening to this fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump. Join us next week as we talk about some more Game of Thrones stuff. Danger Zone!
Only the coward dress in armor.
Oh, iron. Damn.
Yeah.
Daryl's
so close.
Five fucking words. And I messed it up. Fuck. God.
We'll give you another shot, Daryl. It's okay. I believe in you.
Don't you dare Easter egg that shit. Okay. Yep. There you go. Yep. Okay. Only cowards dress in armor. Damn it!
How strong of a drink did you make, Daryl?
It's pretty hefty. It's, you know, a little bit of Evan Williams and some Coca-Cola. Hang on. Alright. Here we go.
Twice?
Okay.
Third time's a charm.
Only coward. Damn it. Okay. No. I can't believe it did that. Okay. Only cowards dress in iron.
Did you use the first word?
I didn't hear it. I thought that was it.